Coming to the last few minutes of the Indie Media Show, which just gone 10 to 12. Do stay tuned for Out to Lunch coming up next with your lovely host, Joe. But time permitting, and we'll see how much of this I can get through. I did promise at the top of the show a bit of a global kaleidoscopic review of the year. And before I get into that, apologies to listeners who were looking forward to the interview with Lucas Scott about the anti-coal mining protests in the German village of Lützerath. Luca was from speaking of exciting dynamic campaign groups, Ende Gelände, which has waged an epic struggle against coal mining fossil fuel projects in Germany. We don't have time, actually, unfortunately, to get to that interview today, but do check it out on our SoundCloud page, which please follow that, by the way, as well as our Facebook account, Perth Indie Media. But as I say, we'll see how much of this global review we can get through, starting with some of the wars happening around the planet. And this is one of many wars that gets precious little coverage in the mainstream media, is actually quite an intense, full-scale a guerrilla war, and in fact with staged traditional arms on arms, army on army, increasingly battles in happening in Myanmar. It's a very complex, multifaceted war with lots of different ethnic groups and oppressed communities who have their own militias based in the jungles, particularly in the border regions with Thailand. Having increasing successes, particularly in border posts, they've actually taken over some border towns and routed the Myanmar military, which people would know, of course, that there was a military coup a few years ago now in Myanmar, brutal repression of pro-democracy protesters. Similar dynamics actually to what happened in Syria in 2011, where in response to the torture and the repression and the imprisonment and the murder of pro-democracy protesters, some people there, in the course of the struggle, decided to make a strategic decision to take up arms against the military regime. And so there is now that raging war of this coalition of militias, mostly ethnic community-based militias, fighting the military dictatorship in Myanmar. Of course, in eastern Congo, the Rwanda-backed March 23rd rebel movement, as well as the ADF, the Allied Democratic Forces, continue to raid villages, rape women, torture people, take over resources in eastern Congo, particularly the North Kivu province. And the Congolese government fighting those rebels itself has a lot of international support, including from Western mining corporations, particularly Canadian and Australian mining corporations, are up to their neck in the exploitation of resources in the eastern Congo, including coltan and wolfram and gold and other vital resources that that fuel the Western economy, particularly high-end tech, smartphones and so on, rely on coltan to function. And one of the major coltan deposits is in eastern Congo. So many hundreds of thousands are there displaced and thousands being killed and villages raided. In the Central African Republic, war continues to rage. The government there is fighting rebel groups with significantly the help of the Wagner mercenary group, the ostensibly private arm of the Kremlin, of Putin's government. And Wagner forces are also assisting the military government in Mali that's fighting remnants of Islamic State-aligned rebel groups. And in both those countries, actually, Central African Republic and Mali, Russia has moved into a geostrategic vacuum left behind by France. So one doesn't want to overstate this, but Francophone West Africa, it's still very much, from Paris's point of view, quote-unquote, their backyard, the equivalent of the Latin American backyard for United States imperialism. So one doesn't want to, as I say, overstate the extent to which France's imperial power in West Africa is waning. But suffice it to say that in those particular cases of Mali and Central African Republic, Russia's influence is growing and it has a military presence there. And indeed, it has a presence throughout other parts of Africa in exchange for military resources, arms sales, diplomatic support, political support. The Wagner Group and associated business entities that are connected with the Kremlin take control of mines, diamonds, gold, oil, gas. So there's direct profits in millions of dollars to be made by Wagner and these other, as I say, associated businessmen. So there was a presence of Wagner in Sudan, whereas people would know there's a raging war between the government there and their former allies in the Rapid Support Forces. Very briefly, the Rapid Support Forces were the paramilitary death squads that carried out atrocities in Darfur a number of years ago. Reports this morning indicate there is heavy fighting in the second largest city in Sudan, of Wadi Madani. And coming back to Russia, they sponsor militarily, politically, the military strongman Khalifa Haftar in his stronghold in Benghazi. Haftar, by the way, is a former CIA asset who used to live near the offices of the CIA in Virginia. But Russia also has a presence in Mozambique, where, again, they exploit a lot of the mineral resources there. So that's sort of a brief overview of what's happening on the African continent. Much to be said about the Middle East. We won't mention Gaza specifically now because we've been covered extensively, but suffice it to say there's a genocide unfolding in Gaza before our very eyes. The Saudi atrocities in Yemen continue, blockading ports, bombarding villages, attacking civilians in their war with the Iranian-sponsored Houthis, who themselves increasingly combating Israeli naval shipping in the Red Sea. So there's an emerging war between the Houthis and Israel in the Red Sea. Much to be said about Europe, but just briefly, there's obviously the ongoing war in Ukraine that we talked about, the failure of the Ukrainian counteroffensive in the Donbass. There was a third war between Azerbaijan and Armenia over Nagorno-Karabakh, which resulted in the ethnic cleansing of Armenians by Azerbaijani forces. We see the rise of far-right forces across the continent. The alternative for Deutschland, for instance, in Germany, is now, according to some polls, the most popular or at least second most popular party in Germany, with it polling around 25%. Moving to Latin America, we have the sort of cowboy maverick El Salvadorian president Nayib Bukele, who's introduced Bitcoin as the national currency of his country. It's one of these sort of flashy, you know, pseudo-charming or superficially charming populist strongmen who's come to power, talking up the power of Bitcoin. But, you know, more sinisterly, has rounded up thousands and thousands of young men in an attempt to end gang violence of the MS-13, a gang that sort of controls large parts of the country but has rounded up and imprisoned many innocent people in the course of doing so. In Peru, we did an interview about this, democratically elected President Pedro Castillo was overthrown in a constitutional coup by Dina Boluarte, and there's been protests against that. I mean, generally across that Latin American continent, the left tide has long since failed and there is a right-wing resurgence. But in Brazil, you know, in good news on that continent, Lula da Silva returned to power and the fascist Bolsonaro was removed from office. And in an eerie echo of what Trump tried with the January 6th Congress storming, Bolsonaro supporters attempted to storm government buildings on January 8th, including the Congress, Supreme Court and Presidential Palace. And finally, in Australia, you know, much to be said, but probably the most important thing is, and saddest and worst thing that happened in this country was the failure of the referendum, you know, to recognise our Indigenous brothers and sisters as the custodians of this land, and to give them a formal voice as an advisory role in Parliament. You know, I think it's a disgrace that we voted no. I think there were actually some good radical reasons to vote no. It's not to say that everybody who voted no was racist. I think that's a massive oversimplification. But I think certainly from my point of view, the failure of that referendum was a massive step back for this country and actually a seismic shock. And be assured, and probably people know this who travel, be assured, if we weren't already, we are now known throughout the world as a bunch of backward racists, and deservedly so, to be quite honest. To a certain extent, I'm not casting blame on everybody listening to the show, but frankly, as a nation, that's a deserved reputation. All right, that's about all we have time for the show and for this year. Thank you for listening. Do stay tuned, as I say, Joe is coming up next with Out to Lunch. We'll see you next year, but until then, as we always say, don't hate the media, become the media.